different room than last time? That looks more art directed than last time.
Well, I think at that time was probably I was looking at the laptop. Now I have like a proper
cool
setup. Yeah, yeah. How have you been? How were your holidays?
Very well, very well, very good. And you?
Great, man. Great. What'd you guys do? Just family?
Yeah, we were just down in Palm Springs visiting friends and stuff, and it was a friend's anniversary, so off we went. Yeah. Yeah, it was good.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining, man. I really enjoyed, as I said to you in the email, really enjoyed the series, The Brother's Son, which was
cool.
It's funny, I saw the trailer a while ago, but I didn't really know that you had worked on it. And I think at the time you were probably working on it when we spoke last. Would that be right to assume?
No, it would have been after, I think. I was done. Brother's Son, I think we wrapped in October of 22. So it's been a long time in post-production. I think the last time we talked, I was in Atlanta doing a movie with Bobby Farrelly.
Right. That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. Well, tell me how you got on board on this. I mean, I would love to know the story behind that, because you had a great story with Robert Zemeckis, so I'm hoping for something similar.
Well, it's sort of similar. I guess, you know, everything unfolds in a different way. I had done a YouTube web series based on the Mortal Kombat franchise back in like 2012 or 2013, I think, sometime back then, maybe even before that. And I'd interviewed for it. I wasn't a Mortal Kombat fanboy or anything, but I'd met with the director, Kevin Tancheron, who was a young, very young Thai, American director, I guess, of Thai descent. Super good guy, but he was like a big Mortal Kombat fan. And I was, you know, I'd interviewed because I think I knew the line producer. But I, at the time, I had a bunch of movies of the week. I didn't have a whole lot of, you know, a lot of weight behind my resume. And I know that he'd interviewed some heavy hitters in town to do the show. Anyway, so I hadn't heard anything back. And I was getting antsy, and I needed a job, and I really wanted to do that one. So I sent them an email and said, look, you know, I know you're interviewing some bigger names, but maybe you'll get more value out of me, because I've got more to prove than some of these other guys, you know, and I'll do it for whatever. I don't care about the money and all that. And unbeknownst to me, they were actually out to somebody else. And they were, I think they were having some trouble with rates and stuff. And Kevin said, you know what, let's just go with this guy. It's easier. It solves a lot of problems. So that's how Kevin and I met. And then we got along really well, super good guy. And he and I crossed paths occasionally on Flash and Arrow. When I was doing those shows, he came and directed a couple episodes. So we always kept in touch. And then he said, hey, do you want to come to LA and do an Asian centric TV show or a show for Netflix? And I was like, yeah, totally. Cause you know, always felt, my mom's Chinese, so we've always felt kind of underrepresented in the business and so on. And I was like, yeah, totally. And he said, it's, you know, it's kind of Crazy Rich Asians meets John Wick was the pitch. And he said, but we're going to lean very heavily into the Asian side of things. You know, there's going to be a mama son kind of character that is the matriarch of the whole series. And so there's a lot of through stories that touched on a lot of Asian upbringing beats, you know, that we were going to talk about food and always have, you know, everything in Malaysia, at least, and China and stuff, always centers around food. So food was going to be a big character in the show. So all the things that he was saying were very interesting. And plus it was an opportunity to work in LA and do a show down there, which I hadn't done. To work with Kevin, who's a really good friend of mine. So I said, yeah, let's do it. And after a bit of trials and tribulations with work visas and union waiver forms and stuff, it all kind of worked out.
Super, man. And you know what one of the cool things about the series is, I mean, I'm not going to talk much about it, but just to kind of give you the flavor, the moment it opens up and the name of the city comes up in Taiwan, right? Taipei. Yeah. And the font and the color and the music, I kid you not, I was like, I was watching Kill Bill. Like it just had that that vibe to it, and it kept that vibe throughout, but by keeping its authenticity at the same time. And it was really, really fun. You know, even the opening sequence, the cooking and the, you know what happens after that, right? And it was really, really well executed. And one thing I think you and I have sort of talked about this, maybe I know I talk about this almost every episode on the podcast when I speak to a DP, is the idea of keeping to the wides. I mean, this was shot anamorphic, but at the same time, it wasn't like, cut, 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 cut. Like, there was a lot of times you could see that the fight choreography was really well executed, and it was shown on the camera as it was happening instead of hiding it with cuts. So that was really cool, I thought.
Yeah, that was something that we wanted to address right away. And that actually had its roots back in Mortal Kombat. We had a stunt coordinator named Larnell Stovall on Mortal Kombat that was very much in tune with the Hong Kong approach to action filmmaking, as opposed to the Hollywood approach, which is to say that you sit back and you enjoy the choreography of the fight and you see it all unfold, on the screen, rather than relying on stutter cuts and cut 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 to emphasize the action. There's kind of a purity to that that's a lot more enticing, and so that was something that we wanted right from the beginning. And yeah, after the cooking, the opening cooking thing, that was that was a mandate that we had right away, was to keep shots continuous and in single sequences as much as we could. Of course, that eventually became a little bit diluted as we went along, but we tried as much as we could to stay wide and show off the choreography. There's a really great video that on YouTube, that if you look it up, from Jackie Chan, and he talks about the difference between Hong Kong filmmaking and Hollywood filmmaking. And it's all about story and all about how you build the cut, you build the choreography to work with the cut rather than relying on the cut to alter the choreography. And it's a really, really interesting video to watch, because he's almost like lamenting how Hollywood does it. He's like, there's when you watch a Hong Kong fight sequence, there's always comedy to it. There's always choreography. There's always It's a dance, and you always end up rooting for the underdog, and it's always the underdog that gets beaten and beaten and beaten, and then he comes up with something clever and triumphs at the end. And whereas in Hollywood, it's cut, 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 cut. You start losing track of what's going on, and then sooner or later, somebody pulls out a gun or somebody blows something up, and it's over in a massive act of violence that doesn't really satisfy you, on a soulful level. So it's a really interesting video to watch. So we took that to heart and really wanted to embrace choreography and stay wide and be respectful of all the work that went into it, from the stunt guys.
No, I'll check that out. Another place it was, I mean, there were a few other spots, but the one that stood out for me was the opening. And then I think it was episode 7 or 6. I won't say what happened, but I'll just give you the setting and you'll figure it out. The golf balls and the sequence and that. That was insane. I mean, that the shot of that was really, really, I mean, I had to watch it again just to kind of appreciate it way more. Because it just had so much in it. You have to watch those sequences more than once to understand what went behind making them.
Yeah, that actually was a sequence that Andrew Mitchell, the alternate DP, that was one of his episodes. And Justin Yu, our stunt coordinator, who was absolutely unbelievable. Justin comes from a really great pedigree. He's part of the gang that did the John Wick movies. He's part of the gang that did the Fast and Furious movies. So he's got a huge resume and a really solid grasp of what's necessary and what's not necessary to tell the story. And right from the beginning, he was, he said, this sequence we really want to use, we want to do it the way that it ended up being done. I'm trying not to give anything away. And at first I was like, it's not my episode and I don't really have a pony in the race. But my concern at first was that doing it that way maybe would draw too much attention to the camera, I thought. That maybe it was, it became about the process and not so much about the choreography. And then when I saw it, I was like, there was still a little bit of that, I thought, in the back of my mind, but it's so entertaining and so much fun. It's like, you just dispel all of those concerns and just go with it, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's also the context behind that sequence, right? Like what the character is kind of going through. You kind of feel that in that movement and the camera work. It's so crappy. We can't talk about the scenes, but I mean, I would love to. But having said that, and I know sometimes what happens with series is that, you know, sometimes there's two DP. I mean, sometimes there's, I know my DP sometimes has worked on series for Disney, where there were like seven or eight DPs because of locations and times and, you know, availability and all that. Was that something similar to this? Was it your availability or was
No,
there
it
another?
was no. When Kevin asked me to come aboard, he said, "You know, he was going to do five of the eight episodes he was directing, and in addition to being the producing director on the show." And he said, "Can you just come and do my episodes? Because I know, like from experience before, doing all the episodes you get underwater really quickly, especially on a show like that's as involved as this, with all the choreography and all the prep that you have to do to keep it alive." So we decided, you know, I'll do all of Kevin's episodes. And Brad Falchuk, our producer, had a long relationship with Andrew Mitchell. Andrew was an operator on Glee and American Horror Story. And he'd started shooting episodes of American Horror Story for Brad, and he was very impressed with his work. So Brad wanted to give him the opportunity to come aboard. And I was like, yeah, great. You know, let's bring Andrew on. And then, so Andrew did, let me see, three, let's see, I did one, two, I can't remember which, but five and six and seven, I think, or something like that. Four, six, and seven. I can't remember. So it works out well because you're kind of sharing the load a little bit because it's such a busy show, and it's almost necessary, I think, in a show like that. You know, so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know the. I don't know if you have seen the series Monarch, Legacy of Monsters by Apple TV Plus. I think it has 8 or 10 episodes, I forget. And then not only do they have a different DP, but they just literally have different directors for every three episodes. They had like from 1 to 3, one director, 4 to 6, another, and 6 to 8, another, and 8, 9, 10. Because you're right. I mean, it does take up on a lot. And it is. I mean, it's like 50 minutes episodes times 8. That's like almost like 4 feature films, right? So more or less. One thing, I mean, there were so many things that I can talk about, but, you know, just to be generic about the fact that the series was so grounded, and that is something I'm so glad to see slowly kind of sneaking back into movies and series where there's not too much, you know, side stories. Everything is kind of like connected to just one story, and it's so, the relationships between the siblings and the mom and, you know, those are, I don't even think that has any cultural barrier. I think that's a universal appeal. And it really spoke a lot. And I think it hooks you on. Besides the action and the choreography, the relationships really hook you on from the beginning. When you read the script, was that something that, I mean, aside from you wanting to be on the show, you know, was that something really that spoke to you at a personal level at all?
Yeah, very much. You know, the whole, it's funny because we went into it thinking, oh, you know, the food thing is a uniquely Asian thing. The mama running the show is a uniquely Asian thing. And then now that people are starting to see it, we're discovering that it's not a uniquely Asian thing. It's like everybody, every culture has a matriarchal, you know, aspect to it. Every culture revolves around food, you know. So it is a lot more accessible to other cultures than I, at least I originally thought. So yeah, but very much so. That was a huge thing. And we didn't know we had Michelle when I signed on. So I was, you know, super excited about who that was going to be playing Mama Son. All the, like Kevin was just saying all the right things. You know, it's about, you know, you could be the biggest gangster, as this show shows. You could be the biggest gangster in Taipei and you know, head of the triad and all that, and throw your weight around, you know, internationally. But when mama says, hey, shut up, and it's, you know, sit down, everything stops, right? So so that was something that was really cool. The show, like you say, it's grounded. It's honest to itself. It's able to laugh at itself, I think, which is fun. That's something we haven't seen in a long time, I think, you know, culturally, when you do a show that's that caters to a particular culture like this one, you know, that caters to the Asian market a little bit more consciously than other shows.
Of course.
So often lately you get a show that tries to amalgamate that culture into the greater consciousness rather than playing towards that culture and laughing at it and laughing with it and you know appreciating it for all of its flaws as well. And that's what this show tries to do, is be honest to the people in it and to the characters and not make them into these crazy Hollywood stereotypes, and just let them be, you know, just let them be people and that are going through some rather extraordinary circumstances.
Yeah, no, it clearly came across very vividly. You know, working on this series, the five episodes that you worked on, what was the biggest challenge in terms of executing a scene, whether it's through because of choreography, some marriage with the camera work, or whether it's just lighting or emotions of characters with the camera?
Yeah, it's on this show, the biggest challenge is always time. You know, it's this kind of level of choreography and storytelling takes a lot of effort and a lot of prep to get it, you know, to achieve it in the number of days. I can't remember what we did. I think we did 9 or 10 days per episode. So it was a really tight schedule.
That is tight.
Yeah. The fight choreography was always like, I remember going to work on days when we had a big fight sequence to do and thinking, you know, I'm excited to do this, but boy, we got a lot of work to do. And so it was always this kind of conflict of excitement and dread when we had a big fight sequence. And to Justin Hughes, our stunt coordinator, he always built more than we needed. He always built, you know, sequences that were much more elaborate, that had, you know, 8 or 10 beats in the fight sequence that weren't on the script page, just so that we had the luxury of being able to go, hey, we really like that beat. Let's replace the one that's in the script with this one, or let's get rid of that one. And it created kind of an embarrassment of wealth in terms of the choreography of the fight sequences. The downside to that, of course, is that you've got 50% more fight sequence to shoot than you originally planned. So there was a lot of decisions that had to be made on set on the day. Hey, you know, let's watch the blocking, see the fight sequence. Okay, that's great. We're not going to have time for all that. So let's get rid of this sequence. Let's get rid of this chunk of it. Let's get rid of that. And let's play that one up a little bit more, you know? So it was always time versus choreography versus trying to, when it was emotional sequences, to give the cast, you know, as much time as they needed for the emotional beats. The cast was great. Like they're just such a great bunch of people. A lot of them are newer actors, you know, Justin Chan and Samsung Lee are, I don't want to say unknowns, but they're, you know, they're very much at the beginning of their careers now. And, you know, I'm so excited for them because it's going to look really great for them. And to watch that on a show like this, you get that's based around a family. That family unit tends to just by default start forming amongst the cast. So once Michelle was there, it very much became the family unit, you know, and watching Michelle bring her years of experience and knowledge to the table and nurture the younger cast into, you know, into building what they needed to build to arrive at their characters was so great. And then of course she has this incredible history in martial arts and choreography too. So she was like the perfect matriarchal figure for the whole show, you know. And then of course she's Malaysian, I'm Malaysian, so that was one of the best parts of it for me, was that, you know, she's our national treasure as far as we're concerned in Malaysia, right? Oscar winner and all that. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's so interesting that you talk about Michelle Yeoh. I mean, first of all, she still looks the same as she did in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which was 25 years ago or something like that. But that element of her caliber of actress that she is, and along with all the newcomers, like Justin was phenomenal. I think he was, yeah, his acting was absolutely incredible in the entire series. That really came across in the characters too. Like she literally held... Not that everybody else didn't do their job, they did, but she was the glue that brought them all together, not only as an actress, but also the mother character. And it was just incredible to see. The characters were so cool that there was opposites of, that's the way it's supposed to be, like where you create conflict, right? In one character and story. And it was perfect. It was, and the casting was awesome. And yeah, I mean, and again, going back to the deep cinematography, what was the toughest scene to light? I mean, I know we can't talk about scenes, but just something that you want to give me an example of that took the longest, whether it was from lighting standpoint or also making sure that, because choreography, there's so much movement and the camera is moving too, so you have to make sure that the lighting is, hitting the spots. How anything that you can share in that realm?
I think they were all sort of uniformly tricky. I think the most, not troublesome, but the most complicated one was the first fight sequence at Mama San's house in LA, when the giant shows up. I think it was mostly because it was like week one of camera for the entire season, and we were starting with a massive fight sequence. And we were on a stage at that house. Interior was a set built on stage. And I think that was a tricky one because we'd very consciously made a decision early on in production design to build sets that weren't necessarily movie sets that you could just easily pull a wall to cheat and get camera positions where you needed to. We wanted to have, to sort of keep that sort of vibe that we're in a practical location and we're actually handcuffed by some of the restraints that you would be on a natural location, on an actual location, instead of having the convenience of being able to remove set pieces to get the camera where we wanted to be. So that kind of bit us in the behind on that first week when we were trying to do this fight sequence. But we were heavily storyboarded. We knew the choreography. We knew everything, how it was going to be. We had a lighting strategy for that house. One of the fun things that we were playing with in the house, you'll notice that there's a really bright street light outside the kitchen window, like super orange, super sodium.
It's always on. It's always on.
Yeah, it's always on. And the backstory. The backstory that I made up with Kevin was that, well, first of all, we needed something dramatic to really drive that room. So the sodium light was kind of interesting against the color of the moonlight that we brought in from the rest of the room. But we were like, well, how do we justify this light source? And we're like, I know what it is. It was the house on the when Mama Sun comes to LA with Bruce to find a house. This was the house in the San Gabriel Valley that nobody else was buying because there's a street light right outside that sends this super orange light. So nobody wanted it because it was super obnoxiously lit. But she managed to get it for a good price because of the street light
That's
right there.
awesome.
So that's the backstory to the house. But yeah, that sequence was a very early like wake up situation for us. Like, hey, this is the level of fight choreography we want to deliver. This is what it's going to take, and this is how complicated it's going to be. So we that was definitely the most complicated, I think, sequence of the whole thing. And we ended up kind of parsing out little bits of it and continuing to shoot them over the course of the season because it was evolving in the cut, and we were discovering things about that philosophy of staying wide and letting things play. We were discovering things about that maybe handcuffed the editors a little bit too much. So we did end up going back and shooting more inserts here and there just to help, the pacing and the cut as the edit was coming together. So luckily that was a standing set on a stage. We were able to have the luxury of looking at the cut and then going, okay, let's go back and do, this little sequence over, or let's pick up a couple of beats of that sequence to help with the cut. So, but yeah, that was definitely the toughest.
And working with Kevin, how was that any different than any of the previous directors that you worked with? Not trying to draw a comparison, just because you worked with Zemeckis and you worked on the show White Lotus. What was working with him like? What was so different about him?
I think The biggest difference is that we're friends from before. Like we have a shorthand. We all like the same. We both like the same things. We enjoy framing and lighting and camera movement in the same ways. And we're always kind of challenging each other to, hey, why don't we try this? Let's do that. Oh, that's crazy, but let's give it a try. What could go wrong? So I think we're always challenging one another and always keen to do something different. But we both put story above everything else, and I think that's the most important thing. Like it's not uncommon that you meet a director that puts the style of what we're trying to achieve ahead of story, and sometimes that happens consciously. Sometimes that's an unconscious thing, and it's always a slippery slope when that starts to happen, right? And you start losing touch with the narrative
Story.
in favor of the visuals, right? And so Kevin and I are always very very motivated by what's happening in the story, and we have a shorthand. We've been working together for so long that there's a shorthand between us that we it saves us a lot of talking on set where we can just kind of figure it out. He trusts me to we'll block the scene, we'll look at it, and we'll decide, okay, we want to do it from this side. And he'll be like, okay, let's go set it up. I'll go talk to the actors, and then we'll build it. And it's, 9 times out of 10, he likes what we built, and we don't have any of that conflict that you get sometimes when a director has a different vision of what was supposed to go on, So, yeah.
No, that is the shorthand element is so beneficial because nine times out of 10, most people, like in the relationship with DP and director, they would put that element of story above their egos, right? Like that sometimes that does happen, like 1 out of 10. But another challenge working with a friend is that, like, am I able to express the way I want to without, you know what I mean? Like, both in both direction without coming across as egotistical. But I guess with your relationship with Kevin, that probably doesn't even come into perspective because you have known each other for a while and that shorthand element kicks in very quickly and efficiently.
Yeah, and we both like the same things. Like, we're both motivated by the same things. We both like the same things visually, so it's a much easier, much smoother process for us. And Kevin preps really hard. Like we spend a lot of time looking at clips from other movies, taking inspiration from stuff that we both like, and really kind of breaking things down and seeing how other people do things, what works, what doesn't work, what we can kind of pilfer and apply to what we're trying to do, but still kind of keep it our own and not just cut and paste from other stuff.
What were some of the movies that you guys looked at just for inspirational?
Oh, things like a lot of like Wong Kar-wai stuff, Grandmaster, Crouching Tiger, you couldn't help but look at. Kill Bill. It's funny you mentioned Kill Bill because Kill Bill definitely came across the screen a few times. But things like that, and it wasn't necessarily always entire movies. Sometimes it was just a clip from something that was interesting, or yeah, lots and lots of stuff. But a lot of Hong Kong types, a lot of Jackie Chan. We'd sit and laugh. There were times where we would just put Jackie Chan stuff on and just sit and giggle at it because it was, so much fun to watch. But it gets into your, just watching it gets into your blood a little bit, and it helps you with the process.
One of the things I find interesting, and it's a cultural thing, right? So there is that element of making sure that whatever you're showing from a specific culture in whatever movie or series, it's closer to the truth with some creative liberties. But at the same time, what happens is, like, you and I, yes, we have different backgrounds, but we've been here for a long time. So there's that, we're kind of like a bridge, sometimes kind of like falling on this side, sometimes falling on that side. And that happens with movies. Like, I remember when Crazy Rich Asians came out, or any movie that comes out that's made in Hollywood about a different culture, a lot of people appreciate it, but there will always be, some that may not. Do you feel, with your background that you have as a Malaysian, like, Do you feel this film, I'm sorry, this series will be liked by a lot of people from that background in terms of ethnicity and culture?
I think so. It's Malaysia prides itself on having a place on the world stage. That's a very important thing to not only to Malaysian politicians, but to the general public. They like to be that. It's such a cultural melting pot in Malaysia, and there's so much Western influence that pours into the country. And to be, for once, on the world stage and to be able to present a little bit of Malaysia to the rest of the world, I think is important to the culture. Michelle, of course, is the greatest ambassador of that. But no, Malaysian culture has always been. I say to people when they ask, what's it like there? Because there's so much, there's so many different races, and so everything's so different. And my response is always that it's the most harmonious racist country in the world. Like everybody's, and I mean that in a kind of a loving way. It's a culture that's still able to not take itself too seriously. And it's the three major ethnicities in Malaysia are the Malay people, the Chinese people, and the Indian population. And everybody gets along. You spend holiday seasons visiting. You go to your Indian friends' places for Deepavali, and everybody embraces everybody else's culture. Everybody else is able to, you're able to laugh at yourself. You're able to laugh at one another, and it just works. And everybody gets along, And nowadays, there's so many walls that people put up to separate us versus them, and that's something that hasn't happened in Malaysia. At least not on the level that it has happened elsewhere in the world. So I think this, yeah, Malaysians love Malaysians, seeing other Malaysians doing well, and to have Michelle Yeoh go to LA and beat the place up I think is gonna resonate really well.
That's awesome. I it's funny you mentioned that Malaysians don't take themselves seriously. I think did I tell you I was in Malaysia last year?
No.
First or even
Oh,
I
great.
was there for screening of my film, and one of the things we were staying right in the center, where that big mall is,
In KL,
the very
yeah.
yeah. So somebody said we need to go try this fruit, and I don't know how to pronounce it. Is it durian? Is it how you pronounce
Durian,
it? Yeah, durian. And it's supposed to be the worst fruit of all time, right? It stinks. And I'm like, okay, how bad can it be? So right from the city where it was all high rises, we got into the street, was all like market. And we sat on a bench and they brought the fruit. And then the first thing I did was I smelled it. And it smelled really, really bad. But just to have that experience, I actually had the half of the fruit, which was surprising. But and they knew that it sucked. Like, they said it's going to be really, really bad. So that's when you said that, it just kind of reminded me that how they were just making fun of their own food, which is so important to make fun of yourself, because then that way you're free and everybody's kind of like relaxed and they can connect to you very easily.
I agree, and it is the king of fruit. It's durian. There's different species of durian, but yeah, there's certain ones that are just. It's definitely an acquired, an acquired taste.
It
But
was bad.
it's kind of you've
But I will
been
tell.
you've been. Sorry, go ahead.
No, please go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say you've been indoctrinated then. If you've had durian, then you've been accepted into the culture there. So good for you.
Yeah, no, it was actually really cool. I mean, I spent 5, 6 days there, mostly in the city. I didn't really go. I wish I could go elsewhere, but it was just busy with three screenings, but it was such a worldly city. Like, you could I just felt that I kind of belonged there, in a sense that nobody kind of looked at you in a strange way. And the food, oh my God, holy crap. I mean, just the I mean I remember going into the food court, and we're kind of going off topic, but that's okay. Food court, and there was like literally over 50 different choices of different ethnicity of food. Like it was just, I couldn't even figure out what to eat, but when I did, it was phenomenal. It was phenomenal. The food was
No,
amazing.
it's food. Yeah, the food's a huge thing there. So that's great. No, I'm glad you had a good time there.
Yeah. Going back to the brother's son, what was one thing that may have you seen the final cut of the entire series yet? Okay. Was there anything specific, without talking about it, that you wished from a creative sense point, not necessarily story, but just the camera visual that got cut out that you wish it hadn't? Was there anything like that at all?
There's always stuff like that. Nothing
Yeah.
particularly stands out on this one. There is one particular fight sequence that I wish we'd done differently overall. Without the one with
Was it in the beginning of the episodes or the later on?
it was I think episode three. I think it's the one that happens on the pool deck.
Oh,
That
the
yeah.
outfits they're wearing?
Yes. I just wish that that location beat us up pretty good in terms of sun direction and all that. And I think that is the one thing that I wish I could redo if I had to. But no, there's nothing that you always initially think that you're missing something. Oh, why didn't they use that chop? And then when you look at the assembly, it's like, okay, well that's why they didn't use it. That, because it extends a beat too long, or it gets in the way of the story. So there's always, which of your children you end up killing. But no, I'm really happy with it overall. I think it's great. I'm always second guessing myself, and at the end of it, I was like, I could have done that whole show better. I felt like,
Course.
by the time you get to the end of it, you're like, I wish that aspect of it was better, or I wish I'd spent more time doing that. But when you look at it as a whole, it's like, okay, well, maybe it did work after all. But I think that's what keeps you
Yeah.
going, right? I mean, it's if you start thinking, boy, look how great that show was I did. I think that's the end of the road, and it's time to
Yeah.
start looking at other things, right? When you're not finding fault in yourself. Yeah, sorry, my
That's true.
dog just came home. So
No,
that's what's
that's okay.
happening off screen.
That's all right. Speaking of that sequence, the one by the pool, there was a really cool reference that you guys did in there to a movie.
Yes.
I picked it up immediately. I was like, whoa.
Did you see that? So did you see the banner when they first pulled up? Like, did you see? Yeah, okay. Because some it was funny because yeah, that when that scene was when it showed up in the scripts, we were just like, you know how this has to de Kevin, you know how this has to end, right? It has to end with that beat out front. And he's like, 100%. So
Yeah, I love that. I'm a huge fan of that film. So I absolutely loved it. Are your family members or friends, are they planning to start watching? It comes out, what, 2 days, right? Yeah, it comes out on
In 2 days, yeah,
Canon 4.
on the 4th of January. Yeah, everyone's super excited. We were hoping to be at, well, the premiere is being screened at Netflix on their screen in LA on the 4th, and they're going to show I think first two episodes. And we were like, oh, should we go to that? But I'm in the middle of a movie in
Yeah.
Winnipeg right now,
Oh,
and had
Winterpeg.
to Winterpeg. Yeah, so we're on our Christmas break. So I'd come home from Winnipeg just before Christmas. And then we had this trip to Palm Springs booked like last year. So we went to Palm
Yeah.
Springs, and we were supposed to come back on the 30th. And I thought, well, if we stay another 3 days so we can go to the premiere, and also the Emmys are going on tomorrow, thought, well, we could do that. But then I end up having to come home and then immediately go back to Winnipeg. And it's like we didn't have a break at all. So I thought, you
Yeah.
know what, better to come home and just take a couple of days to not be running around. But yeah, the premiere's on the 4th.
Yeah, that would have been great, but at the same time, it's 3.5 hour flight, another two hours to get there, 2 hours to come back, and it's almost like chewing up an entire day, right? So
It would have been brutal. And then rushing off to Winnipeg again to continue on that movie would
yeah.
be, nothing worse than
What do you
showing up tired.
That's true. That's true. Are you
Yeah.
able to talk about what you're working on right now? That the
Yeah, I'm
fact that
doing
you
a
mentioned.
movie. Yeah, it's a Lionsgate movie based on a book that I wasn't aware of, but apparently is quite well known, entitled "The Best Christmas Pageant Ever," and
Okay.
it's about a, it's faith based, I think is the way you say it. And it's a director named Dallas Jenkins that's doing it. Super good guy, great bunch of people. It's a movie about redemption and the real Christmas spirit and that sort of thing. I'm not particularly religious myself, but it was it's a great story, and it's got some really heartfelt moments in it. And I think based on how dear the book is to people, I think it's gonna do some numbers. We're trying to make a new kind of Christmas classic movie, because there hasn't been one in a while. So that's what that one's all about.
So I'm guessing that's coming out next Christmas. I'm
Yes.
assuming.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. Good for you. Good for you.
Yeah.
And
Thanks.
yeah, I'll go back to the brother's son in a second, but any other exciting projects on the horizon? You don't have to talk about what they are, but just something that you're excited about.
Yeah, there's I'm gonna go from that to I'm gonna work, get to work in Vancouver for a change for the next
Nice.
9 months or whatever it is. I'm going to join the team on Invasion for Apple TV for their third season. So that's gonna be fun. It would
Which
be nice to do something
series,
that's
sorry? Which
Invasion.
series? Oh, Invasion. Okay. Yes, yes, yes.
So that'll be fun. Do something sci-fi, get away from the Christmas movies a little bit, because I've done two of those back to back. So it'll be nice to do something a little darker, a little bit more mysterious. So,
So they're doing season three now? They're starting filming. Is that what you? Okay, I saw see the first season. I haven't seen the second one yet. I don't know there was a third one coming. So I guess so that would be probably another year from now or so, maybe even beyond that.
It's a slow burn, that series. I watched the first season when it first came out, and I was like, it's kind of slow. Like it takes a long time to get going. But if you stick with it, it starts to develop quite a bit of momentum, and it's quite. And season two really starts expanding. And the plan was that in season three, all the worlds kind of collide, and it really kind of comes to fruition. So we'll see. I
Yeah,
saw in my
season.
email. Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, yeah, please, Kim. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I just saw in my email this morning that we had about nine scenes and storyboards just popped in this morning, so it seems like they're getting in the saddle for sure.
That's awesome. I remember season one, there was an episode which reminded me of the movie Signs when the whole it was shot in the house completely, which I thought was, even though it was similar, it was probably the best episode along with the pilot. I don't know, I wanted to watch the second season, but I just felt some of the performances in the first season of some actors weren't that strong, and maybe it changed in season two, I don't know. But I'll give that a whirl now that there's season three coming out. And when are you guys starting season three? Like next couple of months? Is that when the production starts?
When do we go to camera in February, I think. I'm alternating with Tom Burston, who's doing the opener. He's doing one and two, and then I'm doing three and four, and then we're alternating two episode blocks after that.
Nice. Exciting.
Yeah.
That's cool, man.
Yeah.
Good for you. I'm really glad
Yeah,
things
thanks.
are rolling for you. Would you say working with Robert Zemeckis has really turned your career around? Would it be fair to say?
I can't imagine it's hurt. I think if Marwen had been more of a critical success, it would have made a bigger difference, I
Bigger
think.
differences, yeah.
That was a dream come true, that whole thing. And I can't overemphasize how important it was to me, in terms of my own development and my own career. So absolutely, yeah, it's certainly helped a lot. And it's also, maybe more so on a personal level, I think, than on a in a real public awareness way. I think it's what it did more than anything was reinstate my faith in the business. I think, you know, to know that at that
confidence
level,
too.
yeah,
Yeah.
yeah, and to realize that at that level there really is a group of people that are just trying to tell stories that are in the best way they can, and that have all the opportunities and toys and materials and everything available to them to tell those stories. So it's great to know that I can keep sort of working towards something that's going to be, you know, that's going to be big, you know. But yeah.
Yeah. It's funny how confidence, I mean, this is cliche as much as no matter how many times anybody says confidence and self-belief. If somebody puts a belief in you or just kind of even hires you, you know, they won't say that you're terrific, but the fact that they're hiring you is because they believe that you are, you know,
Yeah.
at least to that level. It really turns your thinking around. It really
Yeah.
puts your confidence back on the map. And then from, I've had that happen to me, you know, just some one person believing in me, and that has just completely changed the trajectory of my
Yeah.
career. And it's
Yeah.
so important to have people like that.
Yeah, that validation is super important, you know. When Marwin came along, I was in the middle of the third season, I think, of Flash. And as exciting as that was, it was super great to do a show like that. I was starting to get, you know, a little bit jaded, maybe with the network TV process, there were a number of challenges that kept recurring on that show, that are on all of those shows, really, that were starting to kind of bug me a little bit. So when Marwin came along, it was a real affirmation that all those things that I was clinging on to and really trying to force the Flash and Arrow to stick to, you know, were worthwhile and were, you know, the things that we really pushed for despite everyone else telling us not to spend the money or not to waste the money, all kind of came to fruition because those were the things that got noticed by Bob Z,
yeah.
you know, before Marwin came along. And it made me think of something else, but I can't remember what it is. It'll come to mind. But yeah, it was definitely validation. And oh, when they first offered me the job, I reached out to Don Burgess, who'd shot, you know, 30 years worth of Bob Zemeckis movies, and said, you know, is there anything, what should I be looking out for? What should I not do that's going to set him off? Or, you know, what is he like? And Don said a really great thing. He said, look, he's, forget who he is. He goes, it doesn't matter what his name is. He's hired you to be his DP, so be his DP. When he asks you what you think of something, tell him. Like, don't sugarcoat it. Don't tell him what you think he wants to hear. Tell him what you think. That's what he's hired you for. You know, that's what he's hired you to do. And don't be afraid of it. You'll find that he's the greatest collaborator you'll ever work with. And he just wants your opinion. And he trusts the institution of your job. And he expects you to do it. So just do that. So,
yeah,
and then
that's
after,
actually,
you know.
yeah, that's so much like Don. I mean, I've, as you know, I've spoken to him and I've met him a few times too. And he's such a cool guy, such a amazing guy.
Yeah.
Such an
And
amazing
he's
guy.
He's getting the Lifetime Achievement Award at the ASC Awards this year. So I foolishly, in my naivety, emailed Bob and said, hey, you probably already know this, but Don's getting the Lifetime Achievement thing at the ASCs. And Bob said, yes, fully aware. He goes, I am presenting it to him. And so I was like, of course, who was I? What was I thinking? So,
when is
but
that?
it's
Is
just,
that earlier this year? In he's
it
getting it?
is, it's in February, I think. I can't remember exactly when the date is, but it's usually just
before the
before
Oscars.
Oscars. Yeah.
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 Okay. Two more questions, man. What's the one thing in the show, the series that you worked on, The Brother's Son, that whether it was at the script stage or when you were filming it or afterwards or all three, that kind of just hit a nerve at a very personal level?
I think
Like if it
just
was
the
relationship.
yeah, I think it was like the biggest thing for me was to be able to do a show with a good friend of mine that centered on Asian culture in Los Angeles. Like there were a lot of things that were pros for the show, you know, that it was a lot of firsts and a lot of, you know, new horizons, new opportunities. I think that was the biggest draw at the beginning. It was like, wow, I get to, you know, check a whole lot of boxes here and have a lot of fun doing it. And then once the scripts landed and starting to read the characters a little bit and seeing how grounded they were and how real they were, and you know, the scripts were written by a lot of Asian American writers, so there was a lot of that cultural undertone that, you know, you'd read a script and go, I know exactly what's happening with mom there. I know exactly how the son feels, you know, when mom says that joke. So I think there was a lot of that resonated with me right off the top. It was, and then looking at the, you know, getting to do fight choreography on that level was going to be great. Like there was just so many things about it that were pros. And in fact, I can't even think of any cons, you know, when the show came along. I think the only con would be being away from home for that long. But other than
Yeah.
that, you know, there's a lot of, yeah, a lot of
Cool, man.
pros.
That's awesome. What scares the crap out of you on a movie set? Or in life in general. Like we all have our fears. I mean, you know, let's face it. We all get afraid of doing. What would be something that if you're willing to share?
I think just uncertainty, like you know, showing up on, like there's always sequences, like no matter how much we've spent pre-lighting stuff and rigging stuff and forming a plan, there's always the, oh boy, is this really gonna work the way we'd anticipate? I think there's a lot of that. Uncertainty is always the kind of knot in my stomach all the time. And that's most days I'll walk on a set going, you know, thinking, how on earth are we gonna get through the day, or how are we gonna get this first sequence set up so it doesn't look terrible? And so I think I'm always kind of second guessing myself. And it never really goes away until we're about to roll and you can look at the monitor, you know, I've been and see that, okay, it is working. It does look the way I was hoping it was going to look. And, you know, so yeah, the uncertainty. And, you know, I still light with a meter.
Nice.
And, you know, and at first, it didn't really translate into, you know, when it was back in the Sony F900 days, the meter just became a way of measuring ratios and making sure that it was, you know, a shot was consistent to the shot before and the shot after. But it didn't really seem to relate to exposure in the camera. But now with the new technology, you know, with Alexas and with the Sony Venice cameras, there's a lot more, it's a lot more like shooting film, and you can kind of rely on the meter a little bit. So I think, yeah, coming to a new set that you haven't lit before and going, oh, you know, I don't know how this is going to look good, but sticking to the same principles. Hey, you know, if when in doubt, put up a really nice backlight, you know, get a nice key going, play with the contrast ratios, and it should work. And so that moment when it's like, okay, the meter says this, it should work, and you get to the monitor and it's like, okay, it did work. I think that's the uncertainty on every scene I do, I think, is always like, you know, I know the meter says this, but is it really going to look good? So,
Yeah.
and that's just, you know, can't get away from that, I don't think.
No, I think that's a good thing because I know that no matter what I'm filming, whether it's a documentary or anything, well, not filming but directing, there is this level of thing, you know, fear. Like it's just that something that okay is I'm on the set, everybody's watching me, you know, that kind of an approach and. Will this work or will this not work? I mean, you have that belief, but at the same time, in the back of your mind, there's that self-doubt. But I think, as you said, the camera starts rolling. I think 30 seconds in, it kind of just goes away. It fades.
I think a
It
lot of
fades.
it also in prep, because like as the DP on the show, I'm often, you know, the when it's on an episodic show, the rest of the crew is out working the other episodes, and you know, I'm sort of prepping it with the director and the production designer kind of on my own. And a lot of the anxiety comes from, you know, have I thought enough about this? Have I, you know, have we got the right equipment for this and that? But then when you get to set, or you get to the tech survey, and it's like, okay, one layer of uncertainty goes away because the key grip will say, oh yeah, we can do that. We'll do this. And the gaffer will be like, oh, why don't we do it like that instead? That'll get you what you want. And you don't have to, you know, then we won't have to do it this way. And then all of a sudden, all those other jobs that are there to help you get through yours start checking in. And that takes the anxiety away, because all of a sudden it's like, okay, I am kind of surrounded by pros that know what they're doing, you know. And then you get to set and you watch the blocking, and the actors often deliver a scene in a way that I'd never imagined. Like, oh, that's a totally different take on how those lines came up, but that's really great. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, if they're going to do that, then we don't have to, you know, we can keep the lighting this way. It doesn't have, they're playing it darker than I read it. So now we don't have to get as much fill into the room, or so everything kind of becomes symbiotic, you know. And then the camera operator is like, they're going, what if we move on that line and push in on that? And then all of a sudden it just like the circus kind of comes together, and the momentum starts driving. And then all of a sudden that uncertainty kind of melts away. And by the time you get to the monitor, it's like, oh, okay, great. That is what it was supposed to be, you know?
That's so cool, man. That's so cool.
Yeah.
Magic of cinema. That's all it is. Magic of cinema.
Yeah.
Fantastic, man. Thank you so much, buddy, for your time.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Chatting with you again.
Always.
I probably will be in Vancouver, maybe Winnipeg sometime in the next coming months. If the times collide,
okay.
Maybe we can grab something.
Let's do it. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, buddy. Thank you so
Happy
much.
Happy New Year.
You too, buddy. Take care. Bye-bye. Bye. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much for watching and listening. Don't forget to subscribe, like, share, and comment. And do come back for another episode. Until then, have a great day.